Welcome to the BitByte Podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only, and is not financial advice.
So we are, what, about 48 hours left into this year? Is that right? Or do we have a little bit more than that?
At the end of this year, math is not my strong suit anymore.
48 hours left. We've had, the craziest price prediction that I thought was kind of attainable was 250,000. We didn't hit that.
Yep. Spoiler.
I think realistically speaking, I was thinking, and I can't even say realistically, I was thinking about 133,000 was going to be our year end, our top.
Yeah.
And we are currently sitting at 46,000, like $720. And we may see a flush out even further if we see another flush out of the open interests on the margin calls. I don't know what's going to happen. It's been an interesting year, though. I mean, really, because we started off, we were talking about this before we got going. Where were we in January? Try to tighten this up here. Sorry, I'm looking at TradingView while we're doing this.
Yeah, I'm TradingView.
January 1st, 21, we were sitting at $29,402.
Yep.
We went up to 63,564 on April 13th. Came all the way back down to $29,786 on July 20th, which was our low, right? And then we started to climb back up. Went back up to roughly, I would say, I mean, I saw some exchanges call it 69,000. We went up to 60,559. On November 8th. And then we've just been kind of... Bleh, bleh, bleh. We tried to pump back up this last week. We went up to 58.41. I have a few different things. I saw us hit about 52, I thought, before we retraced. We just never got to close that high. And now we are currently at 46.448 with 48 hours left. First yep. off, are you disappointed with the performance of Bitcoin so far this year?
I would say no. I mean, it's still kind of up. Well, I bought it basically the end of last year. Granted, I bought it right before it went from 20 to 30 and never really looked back from there. So my timing was stupendous on that. But that 1 month of activity is, I mean, it's not really gone up a whole lot in the past year after that. So
no, it hasn't. I mean, and that's why I think, a big part of it is that it's been like a year of being range bound within, I mean, and given it's a big range, right? I mean, we were talking about that $40,000 or whatever.
Yeah, 39 roughly.
Yeah, that we've been kind of bouncing around between. And I mean, honestly, because of what I've seen, I mean, what you saw at the beginning of the year where we basically had a 50% increase within 2 months, if that.
It was like 2 weeks when I bought in.
Yeah,
I literally bought it right before it eclipsed 20, and then it never came back down.
Yeah, and I honestly don't think we'll ever see 20 again. I still honestly don't think we'll see below 30,000 ever again. I honestly don't think we'll probably see below, say, 38,000 again. Is it possible? For sure. I don't see that in the cards. I think there's too many. There's too many big players in the game right now. And I think there's a lot of those big players that would love to buy at that level. And personally, I think that's why we're seeing a lot of this kind of this action in the market, is that it's a big move on the price suppression. Cause what's happening is, I mean, I was looking at a Will Clement's chart earlier today, and the hodlers, or the big whales that are accumulating major amounts of money that are holding long-term positions, That supply shock ratio just keeps increasing. Like it's not making sense. We've talked about this before on the podcast, where this price does not match the amount that's being accumulated and pulled off the exchanges, right?
Right.
So it's frustrating because, I mean, you've seen Bitcoin perform the way that it did at the beginning of the year. You know it can do it, and we haven't seen that. And now at the same time, we have much smarter investors in the game, or at least more, oh, how would you put it? Experienced, maybe?
Savvy.
They know how to play the market a little bit better. We're seeing a lot of year-end people trying to pull money for taxes. You know, any big investment bankers are trying to make sure that their portfolios look really good for the end of the year, because we're coming up on the end of the quarter plus the end of a year all at the same time. Personally, I think I'm a little underwhelmed. I think by no means am I unhappy. I mean, I really got to think about where it's come from. I mean, because when you think about basically, what was that? How many months ago was that when we hit our low back in March of 20? You know, we were at like $3,000.
Yeah, the all-time low, at least in the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, that was a crazy time. And I knew even back then, though, when I looked at it, I was like, man, I think I bought that day whenever I saw it that low. I probably put in an extra, I don't have a whole lot of money to play with in that kind of thing, but I put in probably another $500 that day or something like that when I was like, I've got to buy, like, this is stupid not to. I was really expecting a lot more, but the whole thing with the bear and bull cycle for a 4-year cycle, I don't know if that's going to continue anymore. I know we've talked about that before. This is so weird. But a part of that though, too, is that, I mean, when you do have those savvy investors in there, of course, they're not going to sit there and make it that easy where you're just like, okay, well, you got 4 years, you're going to end with a big boom parabolic run up, and then it's going to crash down, and then you wait and you accumulate at the bottom, and then you buy up again and let it run up again. It'd be too easy if that was the case.
Well, one thing that, I'm also thinking about is, when was it, back in October or November, the Bitcoin ETF?
Mm-hmm.
Ever since that's gone into play, the Bitcoin has not really been doing so hot.
Yeah, and that I always find interesting because it's a futures market. It's not spot, which I always, to me, that boggles my mind because they're not touching the actual asset, the underlying asset. But they can play it on both sides, right?
Yep.
Because they can call for Bitcoin to be hit a certain target below. And then if the whales are the ones that are trading on both sides of it, which I'm sure those guys have enough money to do it on both sides, then they can put in that the price is going to drop, right? Then they put in a spoof trade on, one of the big exchanges where they've got like 1,000 coins lined up to be sold. It basically tanks the price because you got people watching those things all the time. It tanks the price, and then they pick up all their extra money on the back end, on the future side, because they called the shot beforehand, and then they buy it up on the spot's price at the lower price.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's,
well, Bitcoin just doesn't have enough mass where these whales can really just, they affect the gravity. They're so large that they, whatever they decide to do, it has a major effect on everything. And it just needs to, it just needs to keep growing. The market capitalization just needs to get higher and higher to where, and it needs to get spread out a little bit more to where this can't happen anymore. And I wonder if this is the year that it finally gets there.
It's definitely possible. I still think the suppression is crazy right now. But, at some point it seems like they've got to let that loose. They can't keep on doing that. Because it doesn't make any sense when you have a very limited supply. Basically you have digital property, however you want to look at it, digital property. You cannot, and when you've only got 21 million of it that is ever going to exist, and that's not going to exist in our lifetime where it's fully maxed,
Yeah.
It's at some point you've got to, that's going to break. And that could be the other part of it, too, is that they're going to wash out a lot of people that are just buying small positions that are getting washed out because they can't deal. Like people always have that reverse psychology, right? Where they're buying at 69,000 because they get the FOMO. They're like, oh, man, I've got to buy it at this point. And then it tanks down to like 45. So, of course, they lost their butt. Yeah. And then they sell at the bottom. You know, they help push up the price. The other thing you've got to look at, too, is that, I mean, considering the state of the world, there's a lot of people that don't have a lot of extra income right now.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly.
And that's really whenever we see a big, big surge in a lot of these things, a lot of it tends to be because of the retail interest. And I don't think we've seen a lot of that. And that's probably why we haven't seen that big parabolic run up either. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But, you know, we've been talking about the interest that we've been seeing this year and how insane it is. And, you know, or not the interest, the inflation.
Yeah.
Sorry. And, you know, especially, I mean, household goods like groceries have gone up quite a bit. But when it comes to like high value things like property, you know, all different kinds of property, you know, it's skyrocketing right now. You can measure it like 10-15% a month in some places.
Yeah.
Or even higher.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I mean, I've been saying for a long time, because, you know, I follow the Austrian School of Economics. You know, I've listened to a lot of different people associated with that branch of economics. And, you know, they've been calling for a crash for a long time. And I've been thinking, yeah, I'm surprised it's even lasted as long as it has, right?
Yeah.
But I'm starting to think that, you know, when crap hits the fan, when finally all the supply chain issues catch up with us, and we realize that there's, you know, maybe the stock market's overvalued or whatever. I mean, I think it's going to be chaotic for all the markets. It's going to be chaotic even for our personal lives. I mean, it might be chaotic to, you know, you better have some emergency food, at least for a little bit, just to cover your bases, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, you know, if anything like that happens in the economy, I mean, at that point, the sky is the limit for Bitcoin because, I mean, the dollar is screwed. The only thing that's saving the dollar right now is because all the other currencies are
pegged to it,
even more inflated, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not that they're pegged to it. It's a lot of the governments around the world are just printing money. I mean, they've all done this for like 12 years. Actually, what, since the end of 2008?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's like basically 13 years now that they've been doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. I was listening to a talk with Michael Saylor and the author of The Bitcoin Standard. I don't know if you've read that book at all or not. I was listening to a podcast basically where he had Michael Saylor on there. And again, I'm trying not trying to plug into the podcast, but they were talking about how Michael Saylor was like, you know, you see these people. And I mean, I guess I'm kind of one of those two where they're like, we want Bitcoin as our money, right? Or as our standard. And he said, you know what? The best way to go about this is to continue the organic growth that Bitcoin has already started. I mean, when you have nation states buying it up, you know, those types of things, you got companies that are starting to put it on their balance sheets, I expect that trend to continue. He said, don't try and push it into a war with the governments, because let that happen just kind of on its own. By the time they realize that it's happened, it's too late. Right. We've talked about that before, too. You and I personally. He's like, you've just got to push the narrative that it's digital property. Just push that narrative alone and a place for you to save your money. He's like, and at that point, when it gets to a certain mass, it won't matter because it'll already be the standard. He's like, but stop trying to push for the anarchy aspect of it or the, you know, the overthrow of the government aspect of it. Don't push that narrative, because basically what you need to do is just let it continue to grow, let it continue to basically flourish in the way that it has. Because, I mean, Bitcoin really has never had a marketing team. It's never done anything like that. It's all word of mouth and just crazy, hardcore Austrian economics built into it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it's based off of, but it's been just, yeah, like you said, word of mouth and just, you know, distrust in different things and, you know, people looking for another investment. And what's kind of crazy about this is the first totally private one. I mean, there's no government involvement in this one at all.
Yeah, they,
which is kind of unique.
You know, they were calling it kind of, I mean, the interesting, really, the truly interesting thing about it, and this is unlike any other crypto out that's out there. You know, when you look at something like Ethereum or anything like that, Doge, any of that, Bitcoin has almost an immaculate conception that took place. And there was nobody that was at the figurehead that was running it. There's still nobody that's a figurehead running it. And it has continued to flourish and thrive. And is basically just because of people's interest that it's continued to grow. There's nobody at the helm other than no single individual, I guess, but yeah, a bunch of individuals that are contributing to the good of the network. And absolutely, no other crypto can call that.
Nope. Well, this is the first one, right? They all are copying something off of this. And it's definitely not like Ethereum. It's, you know, more private, especially like Doge.
Yeah.
Those type of things. You know, they're not run off of the network, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you look at, I guess, you know, some of the big things that have come out of the Fed and, you know, the Jerome Powell, you know, talking about how what Bitcoin is real. You know, what Satoshi created is real. It's not that it was real. It is real. And it's completely decentralized. There's nothing like it out there. Everything else is going to be marked as a security by the Securities and Exchange Commission, I'm sure. Because there's always a figurehead and there's always somebody that's saying, okay, well, we're going to profit. In Bitcoin, yep, you can't say that. I mean, we're going to profit, yeah, but it's not that way. There was no promise made when you bought Bitcoin that you were going to profit. I guess not illicitly from any one individual.
No. There's no figurehead that can pull all the strings.
No. Nope.
It's all on the ledger. And everyone has to agree.
Yeah. I guess, and really, so kind of go back to what I was asking you before. I'm going to ask you two questions. First one I want to know is, what do you think our year-end prediction or year-end price will be within the next, say, 48 hours? Where do you think Bitcoin will end 2021?
I still say it's going to be somewhere around 50.
I'm hoping. I want to see us close 2021 at 48.6. That's where I want our price to be. I mean, above that, great. I just don't want to be below that. And that's, yeah, basically, I want to say that's within the 200-day moving average. So I want to be above that. And then the second question then is, where do you see Bitcoin going in 2022?
Okay. So, you know, I said 50. Realistically, I mean, it could close at 45 on the first question. The second question of where it's going to do by the end of 2022, I mean, it's hard to say. I think the dollar is getting so devalued that I'm thinking that it's going to be worth at least two or three times whatever it's worth at the end of this year. Say it's 150 at the end of the year, it's going to be 150,
okay,
at the end of next year.
And I can totally get on board with that. I do. The only thing that I think can throw a monkey in the wrench next year is, I mean, I wonder how much of what we have currently is going to be affected by, well, and that's even if the Federal Reserve decides to raise interest rates, right? If interest rates go up, I mean, I just wonder what that may do to this. But I will say, okay, you said 150. I'm going to have to be different. I'm going to say 220.
You know what? Go balls out, Hans.
Yeah, well, if I was going to go balls out, I'd say 330,000. 330,000 by the end of 2022.
You know, I hope you're right.
If that does happen, though, that means we got our parabolic run up, and then we probably will. And I won't even say that'll be our 22. I'll say that would be, well, I'll say that's the high for 2022. I'm not saying we'll end 2022 with that. I'm just saying for 2022, that'll be the highest, 330. Because if we get that, if that happens, we had a parabolic pop, and that means we're probably going to retrace down to about $60,000, $70,000.
Wow. Well, if the low next year is $60,000 or $70,000, we're doing pretty all right.
Yeah. Yeah, because what is that? If it was... What's that percentage drop?
That's a huge drop if you went from there. That's like an 80% drop.
Yeah, that would be about on par with if we had a parabolic pop, what would happen? Because that's usually what we see. But that's if we go back into that whole bear bull cycle like that. I don't know. I really don't know, man.
Cool. That's what makes it interesting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't know. I mean, and I don't care what the hell anybody says. I mean, Plan B, he was doing a pretty good job. And I understand his stock to flow model. I mean, I can't say intrinsically or intuitively, like the back of my hand, know his stock to flow model, but I get where he's coming from. And the next halving, I mean, that stock to flow is going to become even more hardened. I mean, it's going to stop top real estate at that point as to stock to flow ratio. So I'm curious to see where that's going to go. I mean, because he's still, I mean, we didn't hit his targets at all for the last 2 months of this year. So exciting times, man. Exciting times. You got anything else you wanted to add?
Nope. Just Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. I saw a picture today of a guy. I'll send this to you. It's a dude about to flick the nuts of a sleeping tiger. With his fingers, he's like, well, here comes 2022. It's like, yeah, I'm hoping not, man. 2021 and 2020 were awful. Let's hope that 2022 actually brings things better. I just don't see it happening, though.
No. Yeah, I saw another meme, and it says, like, 2022 arrives just on time, and it's a train coming at you that's on fire. And it's like, you know, that's probably accurate.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Son of a... Yeah, that's. We'll see. Hopefully, the year's better for us than what the past couple have been. But
you know that Chinese proverb: "May you live in interesting times."
Oh well, I think we did it. It's happening.
Yeah, no, it's been interesting. I mean, we've seen a lot of stuff. You know, being our age, so
yeah, I was gonna say at our age. I mean, thinking about that, I mean, we grew up in the Cold War. We've seen like, Don't want to go too far into all that. But, yeah, we've seen some crazy stuff in our times. Yep. You can follow us at the BitByte Pod on Twitter. And you can email us at contact@thebitbytepodcast.com. And really, that's it. And Happy New Year's. That's all I got to say.
Alrighty.
Bye.